It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Winning isn't everything. He wouldn't know. He's never lost. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports, now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
One thing I said that I would never do. A look from you and I would fall from grace.
Friday, April 17th, 2015. Primetime Sports is on your radio. It's also on television, coast to coast, on the Sportsnet family of networks. I'm Bob McCown. To my left is Jeff Blair, host of the Jeff Blair Story Star Show.
Featuring Jeff Blair.
Co-hosted by Jeff Blair. To my far right, Dave Perkins, who returns for third time this week.
Yes.
Wow. You're getting right back into it, aren't you?
Spectacular.
And this is Ken Reed over here. Now, why are you sitting here? You usually sit over there.
Why are you?
Did you defer to Blair?
I deferred to Perk.
Did we not get the pink shirt memo here?
Can't all be established.
Oh, yeah. Wait a second.
Jeff Blair and I.
Which pink shirt do you like better, Perk?
I kind of like Kenny's because it's got that purple tie going with it. It works. You know.
Sorry.
You've got a chance. If you go home and get a nice tie, you could. We'll grade you then.
Give Blair time, though, because I think Jeff is making a fantastic transition from hardcore, miserable, bad mood print guy into happy broadcast guy.
Yeah. I haven't been in a bad mood for at least, what, month?
See, what time is it?
I don't know. I don't listen to your show.
You don't have to listen to my show to know that. You see me around here.
I've seen you in a bad mood.
Once or twice.
Are the Blue Jays 5-5?
Yes.
Is that what they are? No? Yeah. 10 games into the season, they lost 3 of 4 to the Tampa Bays. You wouldn't have thought that, but Tampa Bay played well. Well, pitched well, I think is the answer. Jose Reyes is now down. Russ Martin has one hit. There are some things happening here that are always of concern, and it's early. Perk, you want to jump
Reyes
in?
Reyes lasted 8 games longer than last year.
No, there you go. So it's a good
sign. Progress.
Progress.
You
know?
And you got another, what, 2 years, 3 years, and 66
yeah,
million? So I figure by the third year, yeah.
Keep growing that turf. His range will get better.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no one is shocked by that. Yeah. I love seeing everybody react to the first 10 days of the season, overreact to the first 10 days of the season. It's, but there's one bad thing I don't like, and they got to shut it down right now. Once again, they're leading the league in walks,
yeah,
like they did last year. Throw strikes. You know, throw strikes. It isn't rocket science. And we went through this last year with them walking way too many guys, you know. They're walking 100 batters. They end up walking 100 batters more than the other LEs.
But don't you think that this is a topic of conversation? Do you think that we are the only ones observing this and they are ignoring this?
No,
I think they're preaching, you know, throw strikes. For whatever reason, these guys just haven't been able to on a consistent basis.
You know, it used to be simple in the old days. If you didn't throw strikes, you went and they brought somebody in who did throw strikes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it was when all those, you know, teams in that run that they had. When they broke in a new guy, he had to throw strikes or else he went right back down.
Well, I acknowledge it's been problematic. I would say to you that what I've noticed about the first 10 games is it's feast or famine for this team offensively.
Mm-hmm. That's them, though. That's them.
And historically, that's probably what you should expect from them. But collectively, they're either all in or all out. And maybe it's as a result of the pitching or the kind of pitching or whatever. But, again, it's another one of those same olds. You think, you kind of hoped that with the depth of hitters they seem to have, 1 through 5, potentially 1 through 6, and then the early season performance of the 7, 8, and 9 guys, you kind of hoped that maybe things were going to come together and there'd be, on those off days for some guys, there'd be enough hits from the others when bunched, they'd score enough runs to eke out a win. But they either kill you or they lose a close game.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't know why people in this city keep kind of waiting for small ball or waiting for the blue. They're not that team. They're not. They beat you by hitting home runs. What you have to do is hope that they pitch well enough to limit the other team to three home runs a game when you hit five. I mean, that's it. It's, you know, people, Dalton Pompey drops a bunt, and all of a sudden people think they're watching the Whitey Herzog's Cardinals. No, they're a team that's going to live and die with the home run.
See, I let you say that first because I was going to say the other thing, and I knew it would put you in a bad mood, but they don't have a win this year when they don't hit a home run.
Well, yeah, but
that's, come on, you got to learn to manufacture runs a little bit. I get
no, you
the
don't.
Yes, you do. It's
not necessarily.
It's some way you have to. You can't just sit back not and wait for home runs. Well, you can't.
In this ballpark, well, you hit home. Power hitting and power pitching is going to win in this ballpark.
I agree with you in principle, but one of the things we talked about extensively last year was Jose Bautista's willingness to go to the opposite field, especially with two strikes. Now, he may have been a standalone in that. I can't think of another player on this team that did it with any kind of consistency. But he did it with some regularity and at least attempted to do it. I would like to see more guys attempting to do that.
Devin Travis does it a lot.
Encarnacion did it last year.
Encarnacion does it a lot. Josh Donaldson
Encarnacion hasn't hit anything anywhere this year, really.
Josh
Donaldson got two home runs, but
I mean,
well, I've seen Donaldson go up the middle. I've seen him go to right field once. But
I mean, that's one of the things.
I don't think it was deliberate. But
that's one of the things that people, you know, when a team isn't winning, well, you got to go to the opposite field more. Well, you got to try to hit the ball to center field or pull it. You go to the opposite field. I mean, that can be part of your approach, but you can't do it all the time. I mean, I keep getting back to this. This is a team of home run hitters. I don't understand why people are surprised that a lineup that has Bautista, Encarnacion, Josh Donaldson in it would need to hit home runs to win.
I think the frustrating part, though, is you get to a point like you get to last night when they were down 4-0 and Bautista comes up with the bases loaded.
Nobody out.
Mm-hmm. And you get one run out of it off a sack fly from Edwin Encarnacion. Now, I'm not saying go up there and bunt with the bases loaded, but you can't just sit back the whole time and just wait for your three, four, five hitters to hit a home run. You know, it would be nice, but it's not always going to work.
Yeah. I think that is what these guys are.
But you know what? It's like you said, Perk. We're 10 games in. They're 5-5. Six of their first 10 were on the road. So I'll take 5-5.
You know, I think what concerns me is something Perk pointed out. And when we were talking before he came on, and it's very true. I hadn't thought of it. Aaron Sanchez wasn't great last night. Perk's right. He was better than his line. But what he was, probably the only guy in the rotation to pitch better the second time around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Dickey's been okay both
times. Dickey's been okay both times.
He's been good both times. But
you like, and as bad as, or as not bad, but as rough as Sanchez's outing was last night, there was some improvement there. Look, I think I thought coming out of spring training, this wasn't a complete team. Sanchez is going to be in the bullpen by the end of this month. I don't think there's any doubt about that. John Gibbons said today he's going to give him another start. I believe they'll do that. He's going to be in the bullpen. It's going to be him, Castro, and Asun at the back end of the bullpen along with Cecil. Somebody else is going to be starting. Because
who's going to be starting? Who's somebody else?
Estrada. There's a kid down at not a kid. There's a
what
guy.
What have you seen from Estrada that warrants
nothing,
him being a nothing?
Nothing. But here's
nothing,
the thing.
He wasn't awful last night when he went in.
Yeah, but you can't tell it. Here's the thing. Sanchez starting, Estrada in the bullpen. Sanchez closing, Estrada in the rotation. What makes you stronger? Sanchez closing Estrada in the rotation. You're a better team with that. I'm not saying that Estrada's a great starter, but I'm saying Sanchez in the bullpen.
I have no issue with Castro and Asuna at the back end of the bullpen. I don't care if they're 20 years old. Until they prove they can't do it, let them do it. I got more concerns over Loop and Cecil at this point in time.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Cecil's got the track record.
Loop was not very good.
Well,
he's got a track record as a closer.
Yeah, and he's not closing right now.
No, I understand that. I like the two kids. I don't care that they're 20 years old. I don't care that they're not experienced. I don't see any nerves. I don't see any hype. I think they can do the job. And until they stop doing the job, I would pitch them there. And I'd leave Sanchez in the starting rotation. Because you're only, if you had an option, I'm with you.
I agree, but
if you've got another pitcher that somewhere falls out of the sky Well, they have a guy that may fall out of the sky. I don't know. Who's pitching in Florida, I think, although barely.
No, there's the next guy to come up would be one of the AAA guys.
Who's the kid in AAA that had the good game last night?
Is it Copeland?
Yeah.
Scott Copeland. Scott Copeland's a guy. He's a ground ball machine. That's fine. He could be your fifth starter.
Which would be nice on that turf.
Yeah. Wouldn't be nice anyplace else.
But wait a sec. This team is not losing a lot of games because of the ass end of its bullpen. They lost the second game of the year because the bullpen blew something. Since then, the bullpen hasn't. Right. It hasn't been great, but the times it hasn't been great have been when the Blue Jays have scored double-digit runs. I don't care if a bullpen comes. I want a bullpen to come in and throw strikes. You know, if you win, if you're up 10-1 and you win 10-9, it's still win. It's a W. Those games, I discount. I'd love to see stats that discount or obliterate those games because they aren't relevant.
The 12-7 game the other night.
The 12-7 game is a perfect example. They were up 11-1 or something. Yeah. And then they go on cruise control. Well, you know, Burley gives up a little bit, but Burley's just out there trying to throw strikes. Hit the ball. Let's get out of here.
I mean, the same goes for the offense, though. When you turn 8-1 into 9-1, that's not exactly, a hit to hang your hat on.
Pads right? The stats, though.
I grant you. That
exactly.
You're right.
And we got a lot of that, too. Yeah. You know, so.
Well, how many is enough?
They just lost 3 out of 4, and they scored, what, 1-1 and 2 in the three games that.
Well, that's the problem.
Weren't started
the
team, by a kid,
and the team that beat them didn't get a hit with runners in scoring position in the first two games they won. Yeah. They were like 0-17.
Did they get beat by good pitching?
Yeah, they got beat by
good
pitching. Last night.
I think they did.
And Odorizzi's a hell of a pitcher.
Mm-hmm. Odorizzi's a real good pitcher.
Well, and even if they're not a good pitcher, did the guys? I mean, you know, average pitchers can have good nights.
Sure. Yeah, Odorizzi was.
And then there are nights where you hit the ball hard, but they go into somebody's glove. That hasn't been happening. They just couldn't get to any of these guys.
Yeah.
At what point do we get concerned with Russ Martin's offensive ills?
Not yet.
Never.
End of June.
Never?
End of June.
Okay. Yeah, I would. I mean.
All right.
He's
it's
here.
Fair. It's worth asking.
He's here to catch the young pitchers.
Yeah,
he's not going to have a 42 average for the rest of the year. So,
well, no, but his on base percentage was at 400 last year.
But he didn't hit when he played in the American League last time.
That's right. He did not hit with the New York Yankees.
And he had two years in the American League East. He didn't hit then. I didn't expect that they got him for his bat. They got him to catch this very young staff.
I agree.
Play defense, and
that's his job.
And be a.
Whatever hitting
and not
you
be
get,
a hole offensively.
Yeah, whatever hitting you get to me is a bonus.
And when you start 1-for-24, guess what? It's only going to get better. So then we're going to be talking about, Russ Martin went 3-for-5 today. That's going to happen.
He, a couple of years ago, hit 167 in April. Finished a pretty good year. Now there was another year where he was 2-for-31. I was talking about this yesterday. Then he went 18-for-44. But he finished that year, I think, hitting 238. It wasn't a great year. But the point is, his track record suggests that he's not going to hit squat in the first month of the season. So, and Perk is right. He's here to catch the young kids. He's here to be a good defender. And let's take a look at where he is in June. And let's see what the offensive numbers are in June. Again, I want to see this guy hitting this ballpark in the summer. This ballpark in the summer is the great equalizer, right? Ball flies.
You can also lose enough games before you get to summer to be out of it.
Well, but I think that's the beauty of the whole season. The division isn't that good.
Yeah.
Isn't up to its usual standard.
You know, and further to that, I'll tell you what, one of the best thing I've seen, if I'm a, for the Blue Jays, has been the fact that Tampa's not as bad as we thought they were. Baltimore's still pretty good. The Yankees aren't good at all. But a lot of people were thinking it was going to be Boston, then maybe Toronto, then a big gap. If you're Toronto, you want somebody there to handle the Red Sox. If you've got four good teams, if you got four good teams in a five-team division, you're happy if you're one of those four teams.
Correct.
And if I'm a Jays fan, I'm looking at
this.
And
you hope
they
beat each other.
Well, exactly. Now Boston goes into Tampa. I like Tampa's chances against Boston.
Well, look at Boston second time through the rotation.
Yep.
It was horrible. So,
and Tampa's going to get better because
we know Boston's
Cobb
pitching is not.
It's very suspect.
Tampa
very
gets
suspect.
Cobb back. They've got Drew Smyly coming back. He kills the American League
East. I was impressed. I think you have to be impressed by Tampa. It's early days, And they may be crappy again, but they might be better than we all thought. The Devin Travis story is a real interesting one. If you look at the deals that Anthopoulos made during the offseason, the least publicized, the one that is expected to produce the least results was the Devin Travis deal for Anthony Gose, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Gose had no future with this club, although he got off to a good start in Detroit. I don't think there's any chance he would have made this club on opening day and wouldn't have been playing. And they get a kid who has been everything you'd want him to be, offensively and defensively.
He'll be leading off with Reyes hurt tonight.
I got no issue with that. I haven't seen anything from this guy that I don't like. What don't you like about him?
Nothing. You know what? This sounds stupid and it drives the numbers guys nuts, but as Jim Leland told Gibbons, a ball player.
Yeah.
That's all he is. He's going to play baseball. He's going to do a bunch of things really well, a couple of things really good. And the things that he can't do that well.
So what?
Exactly. You're not going to notice it. Mm-hmm.
It's one of those good deals for both teams because this guy was blocked behind Kinsler.
Yes.
He was going nowhere.
Yeah.
Detroit. So, you know.
Yeah, Ghost.
And they had a third base. They had the Castellanos coming.
Yeah.
At third. So.
But I was prepared to look at the cast of characters, Kawasaki and Goins and.
Yeah. His Touras,
and say, all right, you're not going to get much at second base, but at second base, I'll take defense over offense at second base. Let that guy hit ninth, big deal. So he hits .190, .210, whatever it is. As long as he can play defense, I'm okay with it. Now you got a guy who plays better defense than we were led to believe, and is hitting like he's been in the major leagues for 10 years. There's nothing not to like about this guy. And they essentially gave up nothing tangible to get him.
It's bonus. It's early season bonus. I think his on base is .421. Ghost is hitting .390 or something last I checked, but who cares? Because Ghost wasn't going to be here anyway, and Ghost isn't going to hit .390 for the rest of the year. I can guarantee you that. He probably won't hit .290. But, yeah, it's a bonus. And it's funny, you know, they're .500 after 10 games, and you could argue that their two best players have been Pilar. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been your 8-9 hitters. It's been Pilar and Travis. You could argue that.
Well, Pilar is the next item on the agenda. Has he played well enough to keep him in left field?
No. Especially, I think, especially with Reyes. If Reyes is out for a while, I think they need Saunders in the lineup. And I still think Saunders is a better offensive player than Pilar, but I will say this. If I was Dalton Pompey, I sure as heck wouldn't go in a slump anytime soon. Because Kevin Pilar has put himself back on the radar. But I think as soon as Michael Saunders is ready to play, they'll start him. They'll bring him up and play him.
Now, are they doing that because they perceive him to be a better ball player?
Yes.
Are they doing that because they traded for him and he was their quote-unquote everyday left fielder?
No, because everybody's got a job on the line this year. I don't think Alex Anthopoulos, if it's going to make his team worse, he's not going to go, well, I traded for the guy. I got to do this.
See, judging by that logic, I would say Pilar stays in because if you're Anthopoulos and you got a job on the line and you got a guy who's hitting everything and catching everything, I'd keep him in there. But, Bob, you and I discussed this yesterday. It's baseball logic. Well, we got him and he's hurt, so he comes back and the job's automatically
his. No, that's not it. His record would suggest he's a better player. And, you know, as great as Pilar has been, made a dumbass play last night.
That dive you're talking about?
But he's more suited as a good fourth outfielder.
Exactly.
And you need a good fourth outfielder. Bautista isn't going to play every day out there. You got a rookie in center field. Let's not count on him for 162. You got Saunders already been hurt. You know, isn't going to play 162. It's great to have a bench who can play a little bit.
I don't disagree that he's probably the fourth. He is the fourth outfielder. But until he proves he's the fourth outfielder, you keep playing him. Because for me right now, he's one of their best players.
But you guys sound like these fans who fall in love with John McDonald every year when he has a hot week.
They say,
John McDonald should be starting. And then Munenori Kawasaki, he's the greatest. He should be playing regular, blah, 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 blah.
Blair will tell you, these I haven't worn my Kawasaki jersey in days.
But these guys in small doses, there's some guys who are meant to be delivered in small doses. Pilar's been great so far, but he's a small dose kind of guy.
You going to help me, Bob?
Well, I disagree with Perk 100%. I want my best nine guys out there, and right now Pilar has done nothing to lose that job. I don't care. I mean, the guy Saunders hasn't played an inning for this team at any time. I look at his track record. He's a decent player. He's not a superstar. He brings some intangibles to the table. I don't think I didn't project him to be as good as the guy we had there last year.
Ooh, he's a much better defensive player.
A defensive player.
No, but he's much better. He's a much better defensive player, and he's a better defensive player than Pillar. All the numbers suggest that. He's a much better defensive player than Pillar.
Well, I've yet to see it. We'll wait and see. I mean,
He's got more power.
He's got more power.
You can't dispute that. To me, I think he could be a 20-home run hitter in this park.
Well, again,
so if he's healthy,
you know.
But I mean, it's
if you want to hit, if you want a team that hits where everybody hits 20 home runs,
I'll take that.
Yeah, but that's essentially when they're good. That's what they are. They're like Jeff said. They're a team that hits home runs.
I'm not a fan of that particularly.
The other thing too with Gibbons,
if you look at the World Series teams, they had power, but they didn't have this kind of power. They didn't have the kind of power where you could take three guys and project them to hit well over 100 home runs. Mm. They didn't have any of those guys. You know, Carter was a home run hitter. Molitor wasn't a home run hitter. Olerud wasn't a home run hitter. Alomar wasn't a home run
hitter. Different time, though.
Yeah. What a different time.
It was a different game.
Back and waiting for the big pop.
You're not sitting back and waiting for it. What would you rather have them do? Bunt into an out? Okay.
Well, no, that's stupid. I mean, that's not what we're suggesting.
I wouldn't mind a bunt once in a while.
You're sitting back and saying that they're waiting for a three-run homer. They're waiting. As if I'm not going to take the extra base.
I'm not saying that. I'm just homer. Move a runner over. Do something. You can't just sit. They sit back and wait for the home run.
Well, the problem is you don't put plays on for guys that have home run potential. It's not Gibbons particularly. It would be any manager. If you've got a guy who's got 30 home run potential, you're not putting a bunt sign down for him. You just won't do it. Whether the guy can do it or should do it, you won't do it because you think, you know,
who was it?
I'm going to look stupid.
Tampa Bay. Who was it?
The guy who hit the home run.
The guy who hit the mammoth home run.
But you see, but here's the difference. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I'm not saying you never bunt. If you're going to try to bunt for a base hit, okay. What I don't like is this idea, small ball idea, that everybody should sacrifice bunt. No, there are times where you don't give up an out. Now, if you want to try to bunt for a bunt single, that's fine. But I'll tell you what.
We all
get that. No, a lot of people don't, because a lot of people, when they say small ball, they're saying, oh, the other day we had Russ Martin should bunt because there's a guy on first and second, and he should bunt. It's a second inning. The hell baseball game are you watching? Yeah. It's a second inning of an American League game, and you're asking a guy to bunt so that you can possibly get him.
The
Jays
don't really have a
sequential offense.
Exactly.
You know, in the Alomar, Molitor,
exactly.
Carter, Olerud days. It was a sequential offense. They all hit 320. I mean, the one year they were 1-2-3 in the batting race. They were sequential offense. They strung it together.
One banger in that group.
Big innings that way. But this team, when they have big innings, because somebody's hit a 3-run homer there.
Yeah.
Usually.
I think it's precarious. I think it's a hard way to win. I think it's a harder way to win playing long ball than it is. Playing for
it worked for Earl Weaver for 20 years.
I don't know what precarious means, but Russell Martin's 1-for-24, so I don't mind seeing him trying to put down a bunt with two guys on.
Well, the issue with Blair,
the issue
is the second inning. If it's the seventh inning and it's a close ball game, I think he's got to put the bunt down.
Why do you give up an out in the second inning?
Yeah,
that might help you get a run.
No. How do you know? What if the next guy doesn't get a run? What if the next guy doesn't drive in?
What if you don't get a run?
Well, by that argument, you'd never sacrifice.
I'm talking about the second inning.
Well, what if by the seventh comes around, you don't have any runs, and you look back and you said, hey, we could have got a run in the second.
There are two reasons.
If you get into the seventh inning and you haven't scored, you got bigger problems than if you did in the second inning.
I've got Jeff in a bad mood.
No, it's just that the idea that you would give up an out that early in the game to possibly set up the table for somebody else to possibly drive in a run is just dumb.
Refresh my memory. Where was Martin hitting in the order of that night? Was he hitting second or was he hitting sixth?
He was lower than that. It might even have been like seventh.
Okay. So he had the ass end of the order coming up.
Yeah. Which had been good.
Which hasn't been the bum end of the order.
No. Which had been good.
Yeah, but philosophically, if he was hitting second and he's got Encarnacion and Batista, or the other way around, behind him, you know, philosophically, he's not going to bunt in that situation either.
You don't want to take the bat out of the next guy's hands.
Well, you're waiting for the home run.
Sure. Well, I mean, last night.
I don't disagree.
Last night, they got the bases loaded, nobody out, the 3-4-5 guys up.
Yeah.
They couldn't get a better situation. Yeah. Well, it didn't work out.
They got one run.
And you know, wouldn't you know, 35 years after baseball comes to town, people still cheer a sacrifice fly. What's up with that? I mean, sacrifice fly in that situation is not a good thing. Right?
Well, I get that, but here's the other thing. And when that guy goes to the dugout, everybody gives him a high five for the sacrifice fly.
Yeah.
So it's not just fans.
Right.
It's players, too. Well, it's 5-5, and a new opponent is in town tonight. It's the Atlanta Braves.
So Bravos, yes.
Mm-hmm. The 6-3 Atlanta Braves.
Of whom nothing was expected, and it's early days.
Yeah, that's just right.
They pitch. Pretty well.
They pitch.
The Raptors welcome the Wizards to the ACC as they, those two teams, kick off the playoffs tomorrow. We'll address that issue when primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Twenty-six before the hour. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. McCowan, Reed, Perkins, giggles.
I'm sorry.
Jeff Blair.
Dave Perkins, raccoon murderer.
No.
Blair's in a good mood again.
Why? No. I mean, I was in a good mood.
Shush.
All
right.
Behave yourself.
I'm just thinking of the. Oh, whatever. Can hold their breath.
Tonight. Tomorrow afternoon at 12:30, the Washington Wizards arrive for game one of the first round of the playoffs against the Toronto Raptors. Paul Pierce says the Raptors don't have the it factor, and they don't scare the Wizards. Well, that may be just Paul Pierce shooting off, and he's been known to do that before. But and we were discussing during the break, maybe the it that the Raptors are missing is a guy like Pierce.
I think that's exactly what he was talking about, and I think he's exactly right. That an old guy with a couple of rings, knows how to work the referees, could be an ass, can take the attention away from other guys in his team. That's exactly what they lack. That's exactly what
they lack. A Jeff Blair. They need a crusty old dude.
There's a reason that guys like Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett and those guys stay around, and it's because this is – the NBA is a reputation league. You don't get calls in the playoffs unless you're somebody with a big rep. And Paul Pierce is one of those guys who can just work the officiating crew, work the crowd. I think he is the it that he was talking about.
Well, we'll see. The Raptors have beaten the Wizards, but two of the games were all three times this year. But the two of the games were very close. One, I think, went to overtime. So they haven't exactly dominated them the way you might have imagined when you look at a 3-0 record.
They haven't, but just going back to Pierce for a second, and you hit on it, Bob, during the break, can I just say how refreshing it is to have an athlete actually, you know, go a little Ric Flair, go a little Hulk Hogan, and kind of say what they feel and not give your crappy, I think Toronto's got a great team over there kind of answer, and give this series a little bit of flavor. Because you're right, like they beat them three times in the regular season, so if you're Washington, you need to find a way to get up. So if you're Paul Pierce, why not stir the pot? Who's going to tell you anything different on the court? So I like that a lot.
Park?
He also remembers last year when when Brooklyn tanked to face the Raptors and then beat them.
Yeah.
Which I haven't heard mentioned at all in this city for the last 11 months, but that's what they did. And
yeah, he's got that block on Kyle Lowry at the end, too, that he can put on his resume.
So, I mean, if you're Pierce, you think you can beat them. Regular season doesn't matter.
I'm quite sure. If you look at the standings and the records of the two teams, their performance over the balance of the season, I think if you're Washington, you're not scared to play the Toronto Raptors.
No.
You wouldn't be. It's a 4-5 matchup, and they have virtually identical records. The fact that the Raptors won all three probably shows slight advantage Raptors, but again, two of the games were extremely close at the end, which is the only place it counts. And I'm not sure you can read that much into it. In terms of experience, Washington doesn't come in with a whole lot of it, other than Pierce, themselves. I don't think there's a real advantage one way or the other. I think this is a real iffy series. I think it could go either way.
Well, the thing is that, you know, each team does something that the other team finds difficult to control, right? The Raptors have a horrible time with teams that pick and roll. Well, Washington does that almost more than anybody. Washington has a terrible time with teams that can go small and spread out the floor. Well, guess what the Raptors are going to do?
Sure.
So it's going to be basically what's going to happen is one of those two teams is going to have to sort of do something it's not real good at.
Yeah.
And I think the Raptors can win the series. I think it's a pretty good matchup for them. But I also think it's a pretty good matchup for the Wizards, too. Well,
who on the Raptors is going to defend John Wall, right? He's going to be flying all over the place. I mean, if you're
Well,
Toronto,
based on history, nobody is going to defend
Bradley Beal's kind of a more concern for me because he's a guy that plays off the pick and roll. And the other thing, too, and Masai Ujiri mentioned this with you, and he's mentioned it in other shows as well. Most of the time in the NBA playoffs, it becomes a half-court game. You can have a track meet all season long and be running up and down and spreading out the floor, but coaches tend to become conservative during the playoffs,
sure,
and it turns into a half-court game. Now you're getting into guys like Marcin Gortat, Nene. How do the Raptors handle them? I think they can win the series. I think it's a pretty decent matchup for them, but, Paul Pierce is...
In order to win, the Raps will have to do something they haven't done for about 3.5 months, which is play defense.
Yes. Mm-hmm. At least in spurts.
I mean, they're going to have to play consistent defense.
Well, I think that's my biggest concern.
Yeah.
Is that a year ago, this team was a decent defensive team and went into the playoffs and didn't play all that well defensively overall and still lost. This year, they've had some games where teams have not scored, but I'm not sure how much of it was because the Raptors were focused on defense and how much of it was because the other team just didn't shoot well. I mean, they held Charlotte to 74 the other night. Charlotte was horrible.
And you would think that this would be a better defensive team with James Johnson in there. James Johnson was a guy that they lacked last year in the playoffs. I think what really...
He's a 17 to 20-minute guy, tops.
I think what really happened to the Raptors is when DeMar DeRozan went out, Kyle Lowry took it all in his shoulders, did a hell of a job, and just wore down. And once Kyle Lowry wore down, bye-bye defense. Because the NBA, your defense
has been bad all year.
Yeah, but in the NBA, your defense starts with your point guard. And he was just worn down to the point that, there wasn't going to be any recovery.
Look, I appreciate the concept that defense wins, and especially in the postseason in the NBA. I'm not disputing that even a little bit. But here's what I've maintained, and I've maintained this with Casey, and I've maintained this with Masai, and anybody else that I've talked to over the course of this year. At some point, I believe, as an organization, as a coach, you have to recognize what your skill set is. Not every team is built to do the same thing. Not every team is capable of being the same. Therefore, you look at the team and you say, what have I got? Do I have a good defensive team that can play a little bit of offense? Do I have a good offensive team that can play a little bit of defense? Do I have bad defense? Do I have bad offense? What have I got here? Well, here's what you had at the beginning of the season when this was the best team in the NBA, at least by record for a period of time. They could score.
It was also the same group that played pretty good defense last year.
Period. Yeah, but they didn't play good defense this year.
No, but I'm saying.
But they didn't play good defense during the time when they were winning.
But I'm saying by
they outscored everybody night after night after night. They didn't have two great defensive nights.
But that's by your logic, the team that was so good defensively last year, which returned pretty much intact this year, with the exception of James Johnson, which should make them a better defensive team, didn't play. Couldn't play good.
All I'm saying to you is we know that the coach has hammered on defense and talked about he has talked about defense after every game, after every practice all year long.
That's how he made his mark in Dallas.
I get it, and I'm a Casey fan.
Yep.
I love the guy. But you are what you are. And if you try and change what you are, you will almost invariably fail.
But when they were running and gunning at the start of the year, like Jeff said, the game will change when you get in the playoffs. Start of the season in the NBA, our team's really going to be committed to defensive games, because let's face it, defense takes work. It's more fun just to go out and run up and down the court. And as the season goes on, it gets a little more intense. When the playoffs starts, it gets really intense. And those open lanes, they're just not going to be there in the playoffs. So you can hope that you can win it by outscoring opponents, but I don't think it really will.
It's not necessarily, I'm not suggesting, Kenny, that the Toronto Raptors will win if they play offense and focus on offense and just kind of wave as other guys go by on the other end. What I'm saying is you have a team that has demonstrated an ability, a skill set, and that is to score points. Whether they can maintain that, well, they maintained it most of the year. They're a pretty good offensive team most of the year. And they're doing it while the coach is hammering defense, defense. I don't care how many points you score. Keep them under 90, under 80, under 100, under 10. You know, I don't know what he was preaching. And either the message wasn't getting through or they don't have the skill set to play defense. Now, maybe you lose in the postseason. We all remember the old Denver Nuggets and when they used to hang up 120, 30, 40 points a night. Well, when it got to the playoffs, they got their doors kicked in because defense becomes important. But I think if you want the best chance to win regular season or postseason, do what you do best and do it as well as you can do it. Don't try and be something else.
Essentially, essentially the same group last
puberty
year.
Puberty just kicked in there.
What did they do best last year? Not this year, last year. Same group, essentially the same group.
They were a much better defensive team.
Right. So they do have the skill set.
But they apparently don't have the interest.
Well, then that's, to me, is a more significant problem.
Well, but why? What other reason would you have for them not playing defense all year?
It's like Kenny said. It was more fun to do it the way they were doing it. Early in the year, they had a soft schedule. They had all those home games because of the World Juniors.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, that was going to shut down the ACC for a while. They got off to a great start, you know, thanks to the schedule and all the home games. And I think what Kenny said is right. And it was more fun to do it that way.
And let's see what, you know, let's take a look at what happened in the East when they were doing that. Cleveland took 2 months to get their act together. Miami wasn't much of a factor. The Chicago Bulls lost Derrick Rose. And even with that, the Raptors still, I mean, they couldn't beat the Bulls.
I get all that. But I'm not talking about what was going on. I'm talking about the way they played.
But I'm saying it was easy to play that way back then.
And if we're saying that, are they a highly overrated team then, even going into the playoffs?
Well, that is what concerns me. Yeah. If you buy into the theory that you have to play good defense in order to succeed in the playoffs, this team isn't going to win. They're not going to beat with the Wizards. They're not getting past the first round.
But see, Bob, because
they have not demonstrated to me at any level that they can play good defense.
But see, I think that's why Dwayne Casey keeps harping on defense. Because he knows that when the playoffs roll around, it becomes a half-court game, and the game game gets refereed a lot differently.
And I understand all that, but you know, you got to pick your spots. I'm not at practice. You're not at practice. I don't know how much he harps on it. What I know is, in every news conference, every clip I've heard all year, the question of defense has come up, or he's raised it. Or he'll say at the end of a game, "Well, we won tonight, but I wish we'd played better defense, and we've got to play better defense as we go to just defense, 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 defense." I think he's hammered it into these guys to the point where they, and you know this happens.
Yeah, they tune them out.
Click. I'm not interested in listening to this anymore. And they all, I don't know whether it's subliminal or otherwise, but they won't do it. Simply because they're tired of hearing about it.
Do they think, and I know every basketball guy will tell me the answer to this is no, but do they think they can just turn it up? Because they did do it last year, and it is largely the same group. Do they think, well, once we get to the playoffs, we'll turn it up?
I don't know.
Defensively.
Well, we're going to find that out, I guess.
That's pretty tough to do.
I think it's impossible.
When you have a bunch of games against the Knicks and the 76ers, two teams that were historically bad, I guess it's pretty easy to turn it up.
Mm-hmm. Or to cheat and not even do it.
You
right.
Know, let me play devil's advocate here as well, too, and this is going to drive you guys nuts, but it is something Dwayne Casey mentioned about a month ago, and you look at the number of games this year where they had a healthy Lowry, they had a healthy DeRozan, they had all their five guys together. It's surprising how many times this year they didn't have all five guys together. And what I'm getting at is maybe we haven't seen the best of the Raptors yet. Maybe we haven't seen
it. You better hope we haven't.
No, but
because they're going to lose this series if we have.
But that is possible. That is possible. They've had significant amounts of time where they haven't had one of their two best players.
But you could also argue that they played their basketball when they didn't have one of their two best players. Because when DeRozan went down for a while and Lowry took
over.
But
you can't sustain
them. Yeah, but they played less than 500 when DeRozan was down.
Oh,
their overall record was
pretty good.
They had a pretty good run without DeRozan.
Check it. I'm pretty sure I saw that they were a game or two under 500.
But they do have more talent than Washington, and that's why they're a pretty significant betting favorite.
All right, let's take another. We've got about 4 minutes here. If the Raptors lose this series, I mean, all year long, what have we said? The aspirations, the expectations have always been win the first round. That was the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody said it at the same place. Everybody bought into it. Nobody's talking about them winning an Eastern Conference championship. Win the first round. Everything will be fine. It's another step in the right direction. They won 49 this year, 48 last year.
Except for Masai. He hasn't said that. But you're right.
No, but I tried to get him on that.
We've all tried. We've all tried, and he won't bite.
He won't bite on where the bar is.
The success for this team is winning the first round.
What if they don't?
I don't think the coach... Well, if they don't win the first round and they play the way they've played all year, I don't think the coach is back.
Perk.
Yeah, I would agree. Something dramatic needs to happen if they get eliminated by Washington.
Kenny, you're not as convinced.
I'm not as convinced. I think if the first round's competitive, then you keep building. I think that the disappointing thing is just the way that they've played since basically the new year, because they started off gangbusters, and maybe that did have a lot to do with the schedule and stuff, and it was really building then, and the wave kind of crashed there for a while. But if they're competitive in the first round, I think you keep building.
Terrence Ross hasn't been good enough and isn't good enough to be a starter on this team. They have to find a replacement there. Amir Johnson is way too fragile. I love Amir Johnson. I love what he brings, but I think his days as a Raptor are coming to an end. And I'm not sure about Valanciunas. I mean, some nights I look at him and I say, he's going in the right direction. Another year, another two, he's going to be a great player. And he might be. Other nights I look at him and I say he's got no chance.
But yeah, he needs it, like you said, Bob, he needs a little more time to grow into a man body. You know what I'm saying?
I get all that. I understand he's still a baby. He's still young.
I'd like to see him play some crunch time minutes, too.
I wanted to see him play crunch time minutes all year long.
Yeah, he didn't play very many this year.
And I really don't understand that.
Nope.
I think if you're trying to develop a young player, I mean, it wasn't about winning games as much as it was about developing the team and the core pieces in the team.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I would disagree fundamentally with Casey on. But so we've identified three guys who might not be Raptors next year.
I think Valanciunas is around.
Yeah, all right, Valanciunas is around.
The other two, I think you're right.
So there's going to be a rebuild anyway. This is not a finished product.
Restructuring.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're going to get rid of 40% of your team.
Well, 40% of your starters.
Yeah. Well, that's a big part of what happens. And bench guys, you know, even though this bench has done a good job, they tend to be replaceable. You know, if you need to make a deal and you need to give up one of those guys, you're not unwilling to do it.
You don't have anybody in the bench that's going to step into one of those starters' roles.
And you don't, do you?
No, I don't think you do. I don't think James Johnson can. I don't think Patrick Patterson can.
So, you know, from Masai's point of view, he may already be looking at this thing and saying, you know, I got 60%. I need to find the other 40%. Then we'll find out how good we are.
Mm.
Where he finds those guys is another question altogether. We will take the break. Still ahead, the PK Subban slash. What do we make of it? What do we make of the penalty call? Was it the right thing? When Stone came back, should PK have come back? Doesn't this open the door to Pandora's box? And then in general, what do we think of the early games in all the series? That topic and more when Primetime Sports continues. You're watching or listening on the Sportsnet family of networks.